Thank you for standing by. This is the conference operator. Good morning and welcome to SNC-Lavalin's Strategic Divestiture of Oil and Gas and LSTK Litigation Matters Review Update. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode, and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there'll be an opportunity to ask questions. To join the question queue, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. Should you need assistance during the conference call, you may signal an operator by pressing star and zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Denis Jasmin, Vice President, Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the call. This morning, we have announced the agreement to sell our oil and gas business and the results of legacy LSTK litigation matters and commercial claims review. We have posted a corresponding slide presentation on the investors section of our website. The recording of today's call and its transcript will be available on our website within 24 hours. With me today are Ian Edwards, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Jeff Bell, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. I would like to draw your attention to slide two. Comments made on today's call may contain forward-looking information. This information, by its nature, is subject to risk and uncertainties, and as such, actual results may differ materially from the views expressed today. For further information on these risks and uncertainties, please consult the company's relevant filings on SEDAR. These documents are also available on our website. Also, during the call, we may refer to certain non-IFRS measures. These measures are defined and reconciled to the nearest corresponding IFRS measures in our MD&A, which can be found on SEDAR and our website. Also, although we are today reconfirming our most recently issued guidance for the expected revenues and margin range in Q4 for our engineering services line of business and providing the results of the company's review of certain legacy matters with the estimated impact thereof on our 2020 financial result, we are not in a position to and will not be commenting in any way on our Q4 and full year 2020 financial results in today's call. Q4 results will be available in the coming weeks, and as usual, we will shortly issue a media advisory confirming the date on which our Q4 and full year 2020 results will be released. And now I'll pass the call over to Ian Edwards. Ian?
Thanks, Denis. Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. So the purpose of this call is to update you on some important developments as the company continues to execute on its strategic direction. We have taken a series of actions that are focused on two objectives. One, reducing the company's risk profile as it relates to our legacy LSTK business. And two, accelerating SNC-Lavalin's transition to a leading professional services and project management company. First and foremost, we are pleased to announce that we have reached an agreement to divest the oil and gas business. It's a strategic decision that significantly reduces delivery and warranty obligations attached to oil and gas LSTK projects and allows us to move fully focused on growing the engineering services business. Secondly, we have completed the review of the remaining LSTK litigation matters as announced in Q3. The scope of this review was actually expanded to include all significant litigation matters and all commercial claims receivables. This is in order to provide a comprehensive assessment of all outstanding risk. As an update to our three Canadian LSTK infrastructures, they also continue to progress well. However, productivity continues to be impacted by COVID-19, and we've also reassessed these costs. And finally, we're reconfirming our previously provided financial outlook for our engineering services business for Q4, which continues to perform well. Moving to slide four and the sale of the oil and gas business. As you know, we've been very focused on restructuring the resources business, which has been a key plank, really, in our strategic direction. We began by closing Valerus last May, and in July, we announced the sale of the South African unit and our European fertilizer business. We developed a detailed and ambitious plan to transition our remaining resources business to a pure services offering and bring it to profitability. Nonetheless, we kept our options open, and the benefits of this transaction are really clear. we are able to quickly and cleanly reduce our business risk by exiting oil and gas LSTK projects, significantly reducing delivery and warranty obligations on all outstanding contracts, divesting a loss-making business and removing the execution risk associated with further restructuring, and enhancing the overall sustainability objectives of the company going forward. Moving to slide five, under the terms of the sale, Kentek Holdings will take on the current backlog of approximately $745 million, representing 100% of the active oil and gas EPC and services contracts, and 7,100 employees. This represents approximately 90% of the current resources revenue. The transaction, which is expected to close mid-year, is expected to record a net gain. Turning to slide six, in light of the divestiture, we have reassessed the remaining resources business, which is mainly comprised of services projects in the mining and metal sector. We are taking a charge of $95 million to be taken in Q4 of 2020, which approximately 30% is non-cash. The charge provides for the one remaining LSTK mining project and three completed, yet to be commercially closed out projects. Turning to slide seven and the second key update. The company committed to undertake a review of all outstanding LSTK litigation matters following the unfavorable arbitration ruling in Q3 related to a legacy resources project. We expanded this review to include all significant litigation matters, as well as all claims receivable on legacy and ongoing projects. This was a really rigorous, exhaustive process that included the latest commercial discussions with customers, updated cost reforecast, new developments in litigation matters. This extensive internal review was led by me, with senior leadership team members, operations teams, project oversight, and legal teams. An external review by expert outside counsel in Canada, the US, and the UK. And the whole process was overseen by a special risk review committee composed of independent directors, including the chairman. Turning to slide eight. The review, combined with the latest commercial and legal developments, identified 20 potentially significant matters with greater risk profiles. Of the 20, seven cases were deemed appropriate to require additional provisions. The expanded review also identified a further six commercial claim receivables that were deemed appropriate to require reductions. As a result, we will be reorganizing the following in the Q4 financial statement. $140 million of provisions related to legacy litigation matters and $155 million of reductions relating to commercial claims receivable. The majority of these adjustments are non-cash. Despite how we are accounting for these matters, we plan to continue to vigorously pursue the claims that we believe are owed to us and defend our position with regards to the litigation matters. It's important to underscore that we see this exhaustive provisioning based on new and updated information as the result of an 18-month effort to de-risk the business, one that is necessary to moving forward and focusing on the future and growth within engineering services. Turning to slide nine and the update on our three remaining LSTK projects. These projects are the REM in Montreal, Trillium in Ottawa, and Eglinton Crosstown in Toronto. All three of these projects continue to progress well. However, due to the ongoing productivity impacts from COVID, the timing and scope of cost reimbursements remain uncertain. We continue to reassess these costs, and as a result, we will take a $90 million charge in Q4 2020. On all these projects, we are in negotiations and even litigation to recover these costs, but we are applying prudence in not recognizing any revenue on these projects until we have greater clarity on the outcomes. Turning to slide 10, we continue to make good progress on each project, with the REM now 40% complete and major milestones achieved, such as the test track is done and the first vehicle is delivered. And we're working closely with the client to address challenges. On Trillium, we've completed the engineering design and moving to the busiest period of construction, with a target of being 80% complete by the end of 21. Eglinton is the most advanced at 80% complete, and we're really active in pursuing our reimbursement of claims here. Moving to slide 11 and the outlook of our engineering services businesses. As you can see, our engineering services business, which represents the future of S&C Lavalin, continues to perform well. Since introducing our strategic direction, revenues have remained consistent and segment adjusted EBIT margins robust, demonstrating the resilience in this business, even through COVID and the uncertainty of COVID. Our Q4 outlook remains on track. So concluding on slides 12 and 13, in July 19, we announced a new strategic direction that had three core components: exiting LSTK contracting work, reorganizing the company into two separate lines of business, and transforming the resources segment. The objective all along was to de-risk this business and generate consistent earnings and cash flow. We have made significant progress in this regard, including the divestiture now of the oil and gas business and the continuous efforts to reduce the scope of legacy risk as announced today. These efforts provide a clear line of sight on the remaining risk and our risk mitigation plans, which we know is important for shareholders and allows us to fully focus on surfacing the inherent value in S&C Lavalin. So with that, thank you, and I'll return back to Denis.
Thank you, Ian. Before we open the line for questions, I would like to ask everyone to limit themselves to one or two questions to ensure that all analysts have an opportunity to participate. You are welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. Let me remind you that we will not be commenting on our Q4 and full year 2020 financial results in today's call. Operator, we are now ready for the Q&A period. Could you please open the lines for the questions? Thank you.
Certainly. We will now begin the question and answer session. To join the question queue, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. We will pause for a moment as callers join the queue. Our first question comes from Sabahat Khan of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Great, thanks and good morning. Just I guess on your comments earlier around the sale of the oil and gas business with sort of all warranties and past, I guess, you know, call it liabilities or just any association with those projects. I'm just thinking from an investor's perspective, does this mean that of all kind of completed projects, the buyer is now sort of responsible for what happens there and we should not expect to hear any more on, you know, past projects? Just wondering how we should think about it going forward.
Yeah, I mean, with the exception of the mining business, as we outlined, then the deal is as you would expect for a deal of this complexity with reps and warranties and indemnities. But in essence, the risks are transferred, all material risks are transferred, and the benefits of the business are transferred to the purchaser.
Okay, and then I guess the review of the LSTK projects, just to follow up there, these are, I guess, do any of these litigation matters still remain with you? Do they go with the buyer, or is this, you know, the amounts that you provisioned sort of part of that transaction? I just want to understand how we should think about that component.
So the legacy litigation risk review and the claims receivable review that we're referring to here and the provisions and the reductions in those are outside of this transaction. So they're non-specific oil and gas. Everything within the oil and gas business that was legacy goes with the transaction. Everything outside of that, which includes those 20 matters with potential risk, the seven matters needing provisions, and the six claims receivables, and the adjustment for the claims receivables are all outside of that transaction.
Okay, perfect. And then just last one for me, on these Canadian LSTK projects, I guess we've seen in the media there's some, you know, I guess litigation with the government.
Yes.
So is the thought process that you take this $90 million charge now and then try to settle it with the respective third parties or counterparties going forward, and there's potential for offset? Or how are you thinking about this?
Yeah, precisely. And thanks. So you're right. I mean, certainly it's public, so we can say on Eglinton, it's in a litigation. There's a ruling actually expected this spring on that particular job. The Trillium contract is very similar because it's an Ontario, Infrastructure Ontario contract, so we would expect Trillium to follow us the same path. And we're in pretty good negotiations here in Montreal with CDPQ. What we feel is that until we see resolution of these claims with our clients, we feel for us it's important to recognize the cost. You know, we don't want to build another, we're de-risking the business. You know, everything we're doing here is to de-risk the business. So we don't want to put more risk into the business by having more claims receivable. So we're recognizing the cost, and we absolutely will pursue very, very hard the recovery. We believe we're entitled to the recovery. And that will be an upside when it's received.
Great. Thanks very much.
And thanks for the questions. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Mark Neville of Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning. Maybe just first on the oil and gas. You know, if this transaction is expected to close sort of mid-year, is there a risk that sort of over Q4 into the first half of 2021, there's, you know, a bunch of, you know, there's incremental losses or cash outflows, or did you try to sort of capture this in everything you did today?
Yeah, it's Jeff. I think as I think we've given in terms of guidance before, you know, we had moved the business to be on the services side, largely, you know, break even in the first half of this year. And, you know, therefore we'd expect, you know, that to be true of the business, you know, while we continue to hold it. And that's both, you know, sort of break even on a profit perspective and, you know, largely from a cash flow perspective as well. We have one, you know, LSTK business on the mining side and the retained part of the resources we're carrying on. But again, you know, I think we feel like, you know, we have captured the costs and the, you know, everything related to that. So, you know, so I think we would see it that way. The other thing I'd say is it'll be, you know, from a disclosure perspective, this will be an asset held for sale. And, you know, we will see at least the oil and gas business, you know, shown as discontinued operations going forward until the business closes. So you'll have, you know, pretty good visibility on that as well.
Okay. But just be clear, in the meantime, before it closes, there are these LSTK projects in oil and gas that you're continuing with, correct?
Well, we're pretty much, you know, they're pretty much wound down. There's a few that are finishing up here in the, you know, in the first part of the year, but there's not a significant backlog left, you know, with those.
Right.
The benefit, of course, of the transaction is that the warranty periods, you know, the delivery of that, you know, is it goes with the buyer.
Right. Right. Okay. That makes sense. Jeff, if my math is correct, I think if I add it all up, it's about $240 million of cash costs, all of this. Can you sort of give us an idea of sort of roughly, you know, what flows through in Q4? I guess first, is my number correct? And then what flows through Q4 and sort of the cadence of outflow sort of over the next coming quarters and years?
Yeah, I would say my number is slightly lower than that, but you're absolutely in the right ballpark, kind of a little bit over between $240 million. But that amount is actually going to be realized, you know, over a number of years. The components of that cash, of course, some of it's related in the $90 million to the delivery of, you know, the infrastructure LSTK projects. The piece that's around additional provisions related to legal matters. Of course, you know, legal matters can take a number of years to, you know, to sort out, and we have those sorts of trajectories in a number of those seven litigation matters that Ian talked about. So the way I'd think about it is, you know, a little over $200 million probably fairly evenly split over 3 to 4 years, is kind of the lifespan. So, $50 to $75 million a year, and it's probably not a bad way to think about it.
Okay. Look, guys, I appreciate all the color today and all the clarity with the press release. I'll get back to you, but thanks again.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Yuri Lynk of Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning, Jeff. Just wanted to follow up on Mark's question on the let's call it 240. With respect to the portion that pertains to the legal matters, how confident are you in the number that you were able to arrive at, and is it I guess that's it. We're just trying to wonder how trying to figure out how certain that number is, and what you did to make sure that we don't have worse than anticipated surprises, because I'm sure there was still some estimating to be done and stuff like that.
Yeah. Let me try and picture how we're thinking about all of this. I mean, because this is a journey that started fairly rigorously 18 months ago. I mean, this is the end of a journey is the way that I would see it. And I think we've said before that the risk in the business is really stemmed from LSTK, whether that's LSTK from a number of years ago, oil and gas resources LSTK, when we did some mining EPC jobs, and that collection of risk is the way we think about it, is picture it in a funnel of risk, if you like, and those are live jobs, those are litigations, those are completed jobs, those are claims receivables. And we stopped the tap. We stopped putting risk into this funnel 18 months ago by not doing any more LSTK. And we've been working our way through this risk. Now, obviously, selling the oil and gas business takes a big chunk away. And we're down to a manageable level of issues that are in the bottom of this funnel now. And this review that we've undertaken, which is an incredibly extensive review that we've undertaken over the last several weeks, with external help, with internal teams, with board oversight, on a much smaller number of issues than we've faced in the past, particularly divesting the oil and gas business, we've got to the bottom of it. And our intention here is to be absolutely confident of the provisioning that we've made against all of these risks, so that we can smoothly go forward and focus on the growth of the engineering services business. I mean, I think we've proved over the last 18 months the engineering services business is a really, really good, consistent, highly performing business. But it's been overshadowed. We recognize it's been overshadowed by issues. Q2 we had an issue, Q3 we had an issue. We want to get beyond that now, and we want to demonstrate and surface the value out of the engineering services business. So to your specific question, how should you think about the risk review, is very, very rigorous on a much smaller number of issues than we've ever seen before in the business. And we're confident in the provisioning and the positions that we're taking here.
Okay, that's fair. Just on the sale of the oil and gas business, I was under the understanding that you were keeping it. So is this a change from what was communicated previously? And if so, just maybe the backstory there. Thanks.
Yeah, it is a change. It is a change. I mean, we spent a lot of time in the last 18 months restructuring this business. I mean, it was an LSTK business with some services business in it, and we've turned this around into a services business that the profitability of it is clear. Now, having done that and having announced that we got to that place in Q2, actually, some interested parties came along that were interested in purchasing, and we looked at all of the obviously the benefits, and we looked at the options of either keeping or divesting, and we think for S&C-Lavalin and where we want to take the company in the future, our efforts are better focused on growing our successful and other engineering services business rather than continuing to make efforts to make this business profitable. And its home will be with a company in Kentech that is wholly focused on oil and gas and nothing else. So it's probably a good option for both. It's probably a win-win and a win-win for the employees and customers as well. But absolutely, this is it's a new decision and it's what we believe is the right decision for our future.
Okay, that's helpful. I'll turn it over there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Michael Tupholm of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. First question just relates to the review of the legacy LSTK litigation matters. As part of this process, were you able to formally resolve and put behind you any outstanding claims, or is this more of an exercise in adjusting some of the assumptions you were making and the accounting around that?
It's both, frankly. So we went. I mean, in the last 18 months, everything that we've been doing is to try to solve these with the best possible outcome for S&C. But particularly since Q3, and particularly getting into this review and getting under the skin to understand, at a detailed level, the risk. There are a number of issues and litigations that we have actually settled. So there are a number left that I listed in how we concluded with finding 20 matters with potential risk, 7 needing provisions, and then 6 claims that we had on our books that we've taken a reduction to. But absolutely, it was a process of both, and a very, very detailed process at that too.
Yeah, it's Jeff, and I think I'd sort of add to that. You're absolutely right. A lot of new information in Q4. Judicial matters being, arbitrated or settled. Fundamental cost reforecasts. Closing out commercial decisions or discussions with customers. So, all of these provisions that we've taken, have had, new and updated activity and information in the last quarter. And obviously some of those have, as matters settle out, and as Ian has been saying, we've been very focused on trying to drive, these to resolution to try and put the risk behind us, those matters, settle out, or we get rulings on them, that informs, other projects that, and positions we have as well. So a lot of new information around all of that that we had in Q4.
Okay, that's helpful. And then just as a follow-on to that, appreciate all the detail you included in the slide deck, including indicating 20 projects or 20 matters identified and how that broke down. But is there any way to put this into context? So I don't know if it's in the context of this 20 relative to what the overall number was, or if it's in the context of the dollar amounts you gave us, but certainly understand this was a far-reaching review, but just trying to understand if there were a bunch of projects that, in your estimation, did not require changes, or does this 20 represent sort of the vast majority of really what's out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we went into this exercise, what we said in Q3 is that we would look at legacy LSTK litigation matters, right? And the reality is that we decided, let's look at everything, let's look at all the litigations, doesn't matter which business it's in, and let's look at all of our claims receivables and all legal matters. Now, obviously, with a business like ours, 45,000 employees and entities and businesses everywhere, there's a lot of immaterial legacy issues. I mean, that litigation, whether those are, with small entities or people, but those have all been taken out and so to speak and reviewed. what we can say is that of the review of everything, there are 20 that kind of had some material content that could lead to an outcome of material loss. So we looked at those in a much, much greater level of detail, getting independent review over them and making adjustments where necessary or increased provisions where necessary. And that leads to the 140 million. Now, of the claims receivables, the number is much smaller. I mean, that we've not got, you know, that many projects left now with claims receivables on them. But there were six that we felt, you know, we needed to reduce our outlook on what success we could get from those claims receivables. Frankly, a couple of those were settled, and a couple of them are reasonably material, and a couple are not so material. So I think that what you should take away from all of that is it's captured everything, and it's a pretty, you know, extensive, rigorous exercise.
Okay, that's good color. Thank you. And then just lastly, in terms of the three Canadian LSTK infrastructure projects, the charge you're taking, what does that assume? Does that assume that the ongoing productivity headwinds persist throughout the entire life of these projects, or are you simply sort of refining your assumptions around some aspect? I'm just trying to understand sort of how...
I understand. No, I understand the question, and a good question. So right now, we're into pretty severe lockdowns in Ontario and Montreal, and the impact of these lockdowns, you know, it's continued, obviously, hygiene, social distancing that we've talked about before, but the lockdowns are restricting the amount of personnel we can get to the projects. And we're also seeing that we're losing productivity now through contract tracing and having to isolate certain groups of our labor on the sites, basically. So the way we've looked at this is to say, look, this lockdown, it's definitely going to go into the spring. So let's assume it's going to get into the spring, and let's assume that spring and into summer is going to be similar to last year, in terms of, you know, things get better, you know, lockdowns come off a bit, but really beyond the summer, we're assuming that things get back to normal or largely back to normal. We're not kind of making the assumption, for example, that we're going to have this situation that we've got now back in autumn and the whole thing's going to repeat itself. So that's how we've reflected that. So it's a forecast of that.
Okay.
I think the only thing I'd add to that, Ian, is, you know, and therefore, because we forecast on sort of, you know, full life project, you know, this is not a run rate number. You know, kind of quarter by quarter, you know, it represents our reassessment based not only sort of Q4, but as Ian said, the assumptions out, including what we see related to COVID impacts in the next 6 months.
And I would stress on top of that as well, thanks, Jeff, that we are not taking the revenue that we believe we're entitled to here. I mean, our approach here is one of prudence because we don't want to add more risk into the business. We're trying to de-risk the business. So we've taken this charge on the basis that actually we should get recovery for this. We should get recovery for all of it from the three clients. And we are pursuing that hard, as we said, through even a litigation on Eglinton.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Benoit Poirier of Desjardins Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Jeff, could you maybe discuss about the impact on your financial leverage and the cushion you will have versus your bank covenant given all those charges?
Yeah, as Denise said, I don't want to, you know, get into sort of, you know, Q4 results or anything. You know, what I would say is that our, you know, our banking covenants, you know, have clauses that, you know, specifically you know, exclude, you know, transactions like the oil and gas business where we're disposing of a business, or, you know, one-off non-recurring items like you see with our, you know, the LST litigation review, you know, the claims receivable, the, you know, the kind of one-off, you know, charges related to all those sort of legacy items. So, you know, what I would say is that the, you know, the amounts that you see today, which of course are largely non-cash, but to the extent they, you know, affect EBITDA, it's much, you know, it's really around the infra LSTK elements. And, you know, as we said at Q3, we were, you know, well within our covenant ratios, and, you know, we'll continue, and we intend to operate that way.
Okay. And now, could you maybe provide some color on what will be the next priorities, kind of the free cash flow capabilities going forward, and whether there's any other divestiture to consider that you might consider down the road?
Our priority is absolutely in the growth of the engineering services business to get this fully transitioned to being a leading professional services and project management company. I think we've always said that continuing prudence and strengthening the balance sheet is a first priority. But clearly now, as we get into our growth plan over a longer period of time, then our capital allocation plan will drop off that. I mean, we're not in a position to get into the details of that today, but absolutely, that's a priority, and that's something that we'll be communicating at the right time.
Okay, thanks for the time.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Chris Murray of ATB Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, folks. Jeff, maybe the first question for you, just on the transaction, just a couple quick questions. I'm assuming that there's no debt or other material balance sheet items that go with the carve-out. Is that fair to assume?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, mostly what transfers or goes with it is, you know, is working capital type items, you know, receivables, work in progress, trade payables, you know, et cetera, you know, some debt-like items related to that, but from an operating, you know, perspective, working capital perspective.
Okay, no, fine. I just want to clarify.
Yes.
Then my other question is just talking or thinking about, you know, the residual business in the services, you know, you've done a good job of giving us an idea, at least around the LSTK runoff, but with what's going to be left with, I guess, the mining services business, you know, just looking at slide six for a sec, you know, you're talking about $55 million in backlog. Is it fair to think that, and we talked a little bit about this at Q3, that business, you know, should look like the rest of your engineering services business on a go-forward basis? And I think you discussed maybe rolling that out into your engineering services business as we go into 21. But just any thoughts around that, around, you know, your ability to grow that business and as well as the margin profile?
Yeah, I mean, you know, mining was a very, very significant part of SNC-Lavalin's business historically. You may remember that. And the business currently is, you know, it's a relatively small business that's left. However, it's centered around specific clients and their long-term relationships that we've got with specific clients. And you should absolutely think of it as being part of the engineering services business and operating at a similar level to the engineering services business, because we've got one remaining LSTK that we'll exit about the middle of this year. And we won't be doing any more of those. And it'll all about services and giving professional services to our mining clients. So, yeah, that's exactly how you should think of it, yeah.
And the $55 million in backlog that you had at Q3, fair to think that's kind of like 10 or 11 months of backlog?
No, it's less than that. I would say it's about 6 months of backlog. Okay. We are winning work. I would say the services part of this should get up to about a 100 revenue business.
Yeah, it's probably kind of kind of 100-150 million over, you know, over the last 12 months or so. You know, it is a business that you know, effectively wins work and liquidates, you know, work, you know, in the year. So you know, so the backlog isn't always indicative of how that business goes forward, you know, that way. But as Ian said, it's not a huge part of the, you know, of the group, but it's one that is profitable, and you know, as Ian says, one that you know, has a long history within SNC on the services side.
All right, that's helpful. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Our next question comes from Mona Nazir of Laurentian. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my questions. My first one was more just for clarification. I'm just wondering if you could break out the $90 million charge related to the LS lump sum turnkey infrastructure projects. Is one project have a significantly higher weighting than the others?
So yeah, it's Jeff here. We haven't broken that out. You know, in reality, you know, it's spread across the different projects. You know, as Ian said, you know, they're all affected, you know, to greater or lesser degrees with respect to COVID. And the other thing I'd say is, you know, on a project, for instance, like Trillium, now that we've and Ian talked about that in the presentation, now that, you know, we've got farther along in terms of our percentage of completion, we've largely finished the engineering, you know, for that project. And as a result, we also get, you know, better visibility into the construction costs and, you know, the trajectory of that. So, you know, it's effectively mixed across the different projects.
Okay, that's helpful. And just for my understanding as a follow-up, is there another bucket or it's just, you know, materially those three projects?
No, it's those three projects.
Okay. I understand that you're looking to clear the deck with a press release this morning and reducing the overall risk profile. After the provisions and claims in Q4 and the related charges on the infra side, I'm just wondering if I could get your thoughts on, you know, your most significant concern for the business going forward.
I think, well, I don't think it's a concern. I think it's more excitement. I mean, I really now believe that we can focus on our engineering services business, all of which are really solid businesses that are performing very well. And the end markets for those businesses in ADPM, infra services, and nuclear are very, very strong markets and have remained strong even through COVID. So I think this move for me, you know, enables a moment in time where we have got down to this manageable level of risks, the legacy risks that have been provided for in this review and the sale of oil and gas, and we've got a whole focus on growth of engineering services. So more excitement than concern, I'd say, from my perspective.
Okay, that's helpful. And just to follow up on prior line of questioning in regard to the oil and gas divestiture, I'm just wondering, was there a formal bidding process that you put out there?
Yeah, it's Jeff. We had more than one, as Ian said, more than one expression of interest, as is, you know, normal in these cases. You know, we took that process forward and eventually ended up in exclusive discussions with Kentek, the you know, the ultimate party that we've signed the agreement with.
Okay, that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Maxim Sytchev of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Just wanted to clarify a couple of things. So in terms of the 20 claims that you identified, do you mind maybe bucketing them in terms of verticals, if it's possible?
I don't think we want to get into that sort of level of detail. I mean, the reason to kind of go beyond a general statement was to just give some level of quantification as to the amount of issues that we're now left with after 18 months of battling through the issues and resolving issues. obviously, these are litigations, and they're with clients, and they're all ongoing litigations. So, you know, I think that would be difficult to go to another level of detail.
Okay, but I think you're, and the only thing I'd add to that, and Ian, you referenced this, you know, earlier, is that it really is across our, you know, legacy history of, you know, lump sum EPC contracts that way. So it obviously includes oil and gas, mining, power, you know, infrastructure. So I'd say it's kind of broadly across our history that way.
Right. Okay. And then in terms of how should we think about, you know, spreading these things out? I mean, like, what's the tail risk of these things? Is it 2, 3, 4 years? How should we think about that?
Well, I think from a, obviously from a legacy litigation perspective, we believe with all the work we've done and all, you know, frankly, the ones that settled out in Q4, you know, how that helped read across to other, you know, litigation matters we have with the reviews that we did, all the new information, you know, that we had in Q4, you know, we feel that we're highly confident in the positions that we've taken. The nature of litigation, though, is that it can, you know, sort of go on for a few years. So as I said, it could be 2, 3, 4 years before they're all, you know, sort of finally, you know, either resolved or settled out. But I think we feel like we have a high degree of confidence in what we've taken and the, you know, the review that we've done. And that, you know, that's frankly been based on, you know, real information, you know, and settlements and perspectives we have, you know, specifically here in Q4. I think the rest of it, you know, is on, you know, the non-litigation elements. We're in active negotiations and discussions, you know, with all our clients on those. Some could resolve earlier, some could resolve later, but, you know, those are non-cash, obviously.
Right. And sorry, actually, that was my follow-up question. In terms of what makes these claims, because you stated 75% non-cash, but, you know, hypothetically, if something sort of goes against you, that becomes cash. So how should we think about this?
No,
so
you should think about these is that they are effectively recovery of costs that we've already spent that we are looking to recover from our customers. So in a sense, while there's an opportunity cost to it, there's no incremental cash flowing out of the business by adjusting those claims receivable down. It's just the opportunity cost of in our view not being able to, you know, to recover that and not having, you know, the highest degree of confidence, you know, to do that.
Okay, that's actually a very helpful clarification. And then, so theoretically, I mean, I know that you don't want to be talking about guidance and things like that, but theoretically, like the non-cash working capital sort of visibility should start to improve now that we have flushed out all that stuff and obviously oil and gas gone. I mean, like, maybe, do you mind maybe providing any commentary there?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And indeed, that's one of the planks or elements of this. You know, as Ian says, the engineering services business, which is the heart of, you know, what we're taking forward, where we think we have, you know, great capabilities, some really unique, you know, competitive advantage situations in some of the businesses, you know, is also a business that, you know, as one of the slides showed, you know, quite, you know, consistent and stable in its financial delivery. And that includes, you know, profit all the way over to cash flow. You know, and therefore, you know, this will over time, I think, allow us to demonstrate a much more stable set of, you know, cash flows and, as you say, working capital movements, you know, going forward. In the short term, you know, as you've heard me say in Q2 and Q3, there's a bit of noise around, you know, some of the COVID payment terms and all the rest of it that the governments have in place. But as that works out, I think we'll see, you know, much better visibility into cash flow generation and the conversion of that to free cash flow.
Okay, that's very helpful. That's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks.
Our next question is a follow-up from Mark Neville of Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, so yeah, just a few follow-ups. Just to follow up on Max's question on the tail risk, and I'm talking about the $140 million of provisions.
Is this something that you're going to have to review every quarter and that we're talking about every quarter, or is this sort of now sort of on an as-needed basis, or as things come up, we'll talk about? But is that sort of how to think about it?
Well, yes, obviously, we will provide and execute a high level of oversight to executing, you know, conclusion of all of those litigations where we've made those provisions. I mean, there are a reasonably small number that have the potential for material kind of loss now, and this review, we absolutely think, is given as a risk profile which is down the middle. I mean, you know, which has got opportunity and risk in it. So we wouldn't expect going forward anything adverse. But yes, the oversight will continue, and obviously we will continue to rigorously defend and pursue all of these litigations, as we said.
But I think, as you said, right, Mark, you know, I would only expect, you know, we'd be talking about these on an as-needed basis, yeah. And you know, clearly what we've done today, you know, is, you know, is to try and, you know, de-risk the business in a way that, you know, it would be very rare, if ever, that we would have to, you know, have to talk to that.
Right. Maybe to follow up on Michael's question on the $90 million provision you're taking for the LRT projects, just so I make sure I understand, I guess you're assuming through the first half of 2021 these efficiencies continue, and then once we get sort of beyond that, is it your assumption they operate at a profit or break even, or I guess just trying to understand sort of what this looks like sort of post-pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, I think as Ian said, you know, we would expect to see, you know, largely a return to, you know, more normalized operations on the projects, in the back half of the year. We don't have a crystal ball, so we'll have to, you know, assess that, you know, when we get there. But I don't think our sort of perspective on the projects, as we've, you know, stated previously, would change. That we do expect them to be, you know, cash, you know, certainly cash flow, you know, break even and or neutral over their lifetime. Yeah, I think the way we've set ourselves up is, you know, we're recognizing the cost. We don't feel like we have sufficient visibility on the quantity and timing of the recovery of those additional COVID costs. We absolutely believe we're entitled to those. But until we get clarity on that, you know, we won't recognize all of that. And so we've tried to sort of set ourselves up that way, you know, which we really think is in one sense, you know, it's hard to get a worse case than recognizing all the costs, but not yet, you know, being able to recognize the revenue we think we're entitled to.
Okay. Finally, sorry, just on the mining and metallurgy, did you quantify how much backlog or how much work's left on the LSTK project, and then the service component that will continue going forward, just for housekeeping, will that be folded into engineering services, or will it sort of run as its own sort of reportable segment or its own business segment?
Well, we'll update the backlog in Q4. Okay. We posted the backlog in Q3. It's going to be complete the middle of this year. I mean, the job will get closed out probably into the early part of Q3. So that's how we should think about that. And yeah, for sure. I mean, the remaining business will be wrapped into the engineering services business.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Our next question is a follow-up from Sabahat Khan of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead. Sabahat, your line is live.
Oh, sorry about that. I was just on mute. Yeah, just a quick one on the mining color that you just provided. So just so we're understanding, this is just one last project and you're provisioning for it, and it's Q3 that you expect it'll be completed. Is there anything else on kind of the LSTK mining side there, or pretty much everything else is engineering services like you just mentioned?
Well, yeah. I mean, what we've said and what we've provided for is actually three completed legacy projects that are, we've still got some work to commercially close them out, and one live LSTK, which is complete, the middle of this year. And the provision is to cover any kind of outcome from those, that bucket of litigations, issues, and completed projects.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
This concludes today's question and answer session and today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating and have a pleasant day.